For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our Wednesday Wake Up newsletter. A thank you to all the viewers in Cape Town, South Africa, 38th on our top cities for views, and some cool news from Antarctica. As you doubtless know, the land of penguins not people because it's so cold is the supposedly defrosting refrigerator of the blazing earth, a harbinger of doom and all that there. But strangely enough, some reckless Norwegian took aerial pictures back in 1937 that somehow got forgotten about in the kerfuffle over the Nazis invading his country in World War II and so on, that were recently rediscovered, and they show, well, what's this? 85 years later, there's no ice loss. Instead, even a bit of an increase. As fizz.org grumps quote, "A local bright spot among melting glaciers, 2,000 kilometers of Antarctic ice-covered coastline has been stable for 85 years." End quote. A local bright spot? Glaciers melting though not? Say it ain't so. We're afraid it is so, kid. Thus, in East Antarctica, quote, "The results show that the ice has remained stable and even grown slightly over almost a century," end quote. Now that's what we call a trend. But they don't. It must not be. So, the piece immediately sobs, quote, "though scientists observe early signs of weakening," end quote. Exactly. A century of no melting is proof of melting. It would be. Hey there. If you're one of the 40% of our viewers who aren't yet subscribed, please click this button and do it. Get us to 100,000. Thanks very much for watching, and back to me. Another unsurprising newsletter item is that the latest embarrassment for Canada's Liberal administration is that they were caught deliberately suppressing information about their carbon tax, and also caught in massive ethics violations and grant-making to insiders by Sustainable Development Technology Canada. Or was it the same pattern government-wide with regard to McKinsey? No, we remember is that they were caught suppressing information about subversion within the hallowed walls of our parliament, and, when news broke, they refused even to apologize, let alone to mend their ways. So much for openness by default. Oh, and the suppression of carbon tax information was so brazen that even the normally fairly cautious Parliamentary Budget Officer, or PBO, could stand it no longer. As the National Post reported, quote, "The federal government has a secret economic analysis of the impact of the carbon tax that confirms the Parliamentary Budget Officer's prior findings, and the budget watchdog said he believes that his office has been under a gag order not to talk about it," end quote. In other news, NPR says, quote, "You don't have to be a meteorologist to know that last summer was really hot. Many parts of the U.S. sweltered through blistering temperatures," end quote. In fact, it's probably better if you're not one. NOAA actually says, quote, "The meteorological summer, June to August, average temperature for the contiguous U.S. was 73.0 degrees Fahrenheit, 1.6 Fahrenheit above average, ranking 15th warmest on record," end quote. Just you wait. Likewise, Canada is being warned of a warm summer, with temperatures in June, July, and August quite a bit higher than at other times of the year. Other than June, in many areas. Yes, folks, quote, "The Weather Network is predicting more sunshine and warmer temperatures for the summer," end quote. And no sum is too high to pay for that kind of insight. Meanwhile, the Australian Business Review warns that, quote, "Transmission line projects are running years behind their initial timetable, with the slow pace of development sharpening the risk of blackouts and price rises," end quote. So, how's that green transition working for you? Ach, nein! Quote, "Half of German electric car buyers regret their purchase or lease," end quote. And a major problem is, wait for it, rising electricity prices. Oh, and according to various news outlets echoing the Associated Press, quote, "The Gunas of Gardi Sugdub are the first of 63 communities along Panama's Caribbean and Pacific coasts that government officials and scientists expect to be forced to relocate by rising sea levels in the coming decades," end quote. So urgent is this crisis that the relocation has been on hold since 2017 while the government fails to build housing. Also, NOAA's relative sea level trend historical data for nearby Cristobal, Panama, show the ocean surging at a massive 1.41 millimeters a year, although that data seems to stop in 1980. But on the other coast, at Baloa, it's a terrifying 1.37 millimeters per year over the last century, although since 2005 it's actually gone down. As for Gardi Sugdub, which sounds like something out of Gulliver's Travels, it turns out to be a speck of land 400 yards by 150, with no recorded elevation, utterly covered in construction that is just possibly squishing the sand down into the water. And nobody lived there until recently because it was a flat, storm-hammered barren. But now, due to climate change, it has storms. As for expect to be, well, wake us when it actually happens. And now, a word from our sponsor, which as always, is you. Because at CDN, we are crowdfunded. We're counting on the folks who out there who aren't already supporting us to click here and make a pledge, one time or monthly, $5, $10, whatever you can spare, so we can keep bringing you facts and logic on climate change. And now, back to me. In the newsletter, we also note that as climate activists increasingly turn to activist courts to get things they can't sell the electorate on, the city and county of Honolulu in Hawaii are trying to get the U.S. Supreme Court to declare oil companies liable for climate damages, thereby rewriting climate policy for the entire nation. And okay, I'll be honest here, there is a certain malicious wish to see the companies go ahead and tell them, okay, we won't do it, and see how Hawaii does without aviation fuel, diesel for ships, natural gas for appliances, or gasoline for cars. Though, of course, if the companies did voluntarily restrict fuel supplies out of the goodness of their hearts, it would be considered a conspiracy and restraint of trade and be subject to federal antitrust enforcement, which no doubt the courts would be happy to apply. Still, this lawsuit remains ridiculous. The Hawaii Supreme Court said that it could proceed because it only, quote, seeks to challenge the promotion and sale of fossil fuel products without warning, end quote. Warning? What are they talking about? Should gas stations have signs saying, danger, gasoline sold here, if placed in tank may cause automobile to operate? But if this long-shot Hawaiian case were to hit the jackpot, as the Wall Street Journal points out, it would make a hideous mess of federalism by letting a state court dictate national policy. Moreover, quote, the Clean Air Act permits states to regulate emissions within their borders, but not beyond. Yet, the Honolulu lawsuit aims to control emissions globally. Honolulu says it is not possible to determine the source of any particular individual molecule of CO2. So, the only way for companies to avoid potential liability is to stop producing and selling products everywhere, end quote. One shudders to imagine the unraveling of American institutions if the Supreme Court really did say that Honolulu, all by itself, could order all Americans to go without oil and gas, and then some nitwit tried to enforce that ruling. In the newsletter, we also note that inherent in climate zealotry is the tendency for people to see what they think ought to be there rather than what they have good reason to believe actually is there, thus substituting aspiration for experience. For instance, this Globe and Mail invitation that we received to, quote, an exclusive afternoon of networking and discussion with Canadian business leaders on their climate progress and priorities on the path to net zero, end quote. But the thing is, there is no such path. And while we'd rather be with rogues who know it than fools who don't, frankly, we'd really rather be with neither. And in addition to seeing things that aren't there, climate zealots often fail to see things that are there. And when we say climate zealots, we include a surprisingly large group of people, including, oddly enough, many Canadian bankers, precisely the sort of reactionary capitalists that you'd expect to find conspiring against the workers and the planet as the executive committee of the bourgeoisie. If you were some omni-cause radical. Yet Gina Papano of InvestNow reports in the Financial Post that at the annual shareholders meetings of Canada's Big Five banks, cocooned in their comfortable government-imposed oligopoly, quote, our organization presented shareholder proposals that, quote, asked the banks to commission and issue reports qualifying and quantifying the impacts and costs of divestment from the Canadian oil and gas sector should they continue on the path of their declared net zero objectives, end quote. Amazingly, management at all five banks urged shareholders to vote not to look before they leaped, and, even more amazingly, shareholders obeyed. Papano called it shocking and reckless, and indeed it is. Banks are meant to be cautious about risk, not careless. In this week's newsletter, we also launched a new series exploring a rival theory of global warming proposed by Professor Qingbin Liu of the University of Waterloo Department of Physics here in Canada. Liu believes that 20th and 21st century climate change was man-made, but not from CO2 emissions. The culprit, he argues in a challenging 2023 paper, was another class of greenhouse gases, or GHGs, called halo GHGs, which conventional climate models do allow to play a role in warming, but they assume that it's small compared to CO2, whereas Liu's CRE model says it's big, while CO2 hardly matters. And this theory, though radical, is relatively easy to test empirically, because halo GHGs, including the famous CFCs, that's chlorofluorocarbons, were widely used as refrigerants and foam aerators until it was discovered that they damaged the ozone layer, which helps protect us from harmful ultraviolet radiation. So, the 1987 Montreal Protocol was signed that banned their use globally. And the Montreal Protocol worked, unlike the Paris Accord, because there were cheap, reliable alternatives to CFCs, unlike fossil fuels. As a result, halo GHGs began declining, while CO2 in the atmosphere kept increasing. And because of that, it should be relatively easy to test which one was actually affecting temperature. And indeed, Liu has proposed 6 ways to test this theory, and this week we started with number 1, the question of outgoing long-wave radiation, or OLR, yeah, there's a lot of TLAs here, 3-letter acronyms, at the top of the atmosphere. For a gas to have a greenhouse effect, its molecules need to have bands in the infrared spectrum where they can absorb energy. And a critical consideration here is that water vapor, the most important greenhouse gas, has a whole bunch of them occupying most of the spectrum. So, other potential greenhouse gases only matter if they've got bands to themselves. It's like a window that's already painted over in a lot of places with black paint. If you add red paint to one of the bits that's already covered with black paint, it doesn't block any more light. And while CO2 does absorb in several bands, only one tiny one isn't also occupied by water vapor. That is to say, almost all the places where CO2 puts red paint already had black paint. It's different with halo GHGs. They have wide bands that aren't covered by water vapor. So, one important way to see what's what in terms of greenhouse gases is to look at heat, in the form of that outgoing long-wave radiation, or OLR, that's escaping at the top of the atmosphere. It's critical to climate orthodoxy that CO2 is blocking more and more OLR. But if that's the case, there must be less of it escaping in that one specific bandwidth where CO2 operates, but water vapor doesn't. However, Liu cites 3 studies using satellite data from 1970 to 1997 that say otherwise. There's actually more energy leaving where CO2 is meant to be blocking it, but there's less where halo GHGs do. And then there's more once they start to decrease. Now, this is just one theory, but it's a major challenge to the obsession with CO2, and it deserves more attention. Speaking of challenges to CO2, on January 15th, 2022, the Hunga Tonga Hunga Hapai volcano, which we will shorten mercifully to HPHH, or you can just say Hunga Tonga, erupted fairly deep under the Pacific Ocean, about 150 meters below the surface, and that was in the southern hemisphere, northeast of Australia. And the thing about this eruption is, because it was underwater, it didn't send much of the usual volcanic materials like ash and sulfur into the atmosphere, but instead sent a massive plume of water vapor all the way up into the stratosphere, which is from around to 20 to 50 kilometers above the surface of the tropics, and maybe 6 kilometers to 50 kilometers at the poles, and some of that water even got into the mesosphere above it and began circulating around the planet. Now, things like ash and sulfur are coolants, but H2O is a powerful greenhouse gas, so HPHH might mean warming for the world. But, as we have had occasion to observe before, climate is complicated, and so water vapor that far up could actually cause surface cooling instead. However, a team of Australian scientists say that preliminary simulations suggest that HGHH caused a lot of northern hemispheric warming and that it will last a long time. Now, if those simulations are correct, they explain the spike in temperature in 2023 a lot better than the models can because of the CO2-obsessed theory on which they're based. And once again, we're not saying it's definitive, but we are saying it's definitely worth pursuing. And finally, and in that vein, from the CO2science.org archive, we bring a study on ozone depletion, the 1987 Montreal Protocol, and the subsequent recovery of stratospheric ozone that says, in the final sentence of their paper's abstract, that, quote, ozone recovery will figure prominently in future climate change, with its impacts expected to largely cancel the impacts of increasing greenhouse gases during the next half century, end quote. Which, if true, would clearly suggest that we don't need to implement any significant programs designed to reduce anthropogenic CO2 emissions, even if they do play a larger role in warming than some people think. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I'm flying high over Antarctic data.
That's right.